Oh my god, we just lost Glenn straight away. That's perfect timing. Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. I'm just gonna charge through. It's just gonna be me and Eddie for a bit. Eddie, how are you?
Yeah, good. Maybe Glenn was like a ghost in the machine. He's back now, thank goodness.
He's got no video on.
I'm okay. I know exactly what happened. You know, when it gives you permission to record, he just said, yeah, leave meeting. Instead of saying,
yeah. What happened there, Glenn?
I don't even want to talk about it. I went to click cancel and my finger slipped and it went to leave meeting.
You can tell it's been a while since we podded. Everyone's rusty. People leaving the meeting for no reason.
I'm flustered.
You feeling nervous to be back on air, Glenn?
Yeah, do you know what it is? It's just, I'm so excited about what's coming that, yeah.
I love that. We need a bit of positivity.
Glenn's happy. He's just nervous to jump on a pod for the first time where he can't defend Eric Dyer.
The agenda is still running.
No, he's finished.
Well, it is a whole new era. It's the first time we've podded without Harry Kane. It's the first time we've podded under Ange as well. I think our feelings were kind of clear on Ange the last time we podded. I think we were all pretty much on board with him. And it's fair to say, I think for most Spurs fans, he's exceeded expectations since he's taken over. Just purely in the way that he's conducted himself, I think he's been unbelievable in handling the whole Kane situation. Just the vibe around the place feels really, really good at the moment. And that's one of the things that I was gonna put to you guys, because, you know, I think when we first lost Kane, I think if we were to pod straight after that, it would have been a very kind of like funereal sort of vibe. And I don't want to do Kane a disservice in terms of being like, oh, he's gone and now I'm excited for the new era. But the truth is, kind of am excited for this new start, given that we've now played our first game without him. How are you guys feeling about the departure of Kane?
Do you want to go, Glenn?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think it says a lot about the way that Ange is conducting the whole club, that we aren't actually that sort of upset about Kane leaving. If this was Conte, he would have gone into a press conference, lost his absolute, like, his rag. Like, he'd have been fuming. Like, told him we can't compete, all this. Like, our only player's gone, all this. But Ange is sort of like, we knew this was going to happen. Calm everyone down. We've done some things to sort of combat this before it happens, but there will be more to do. And it also kind of speaks to the openness of the content that he's creating with the club as well, because a lot of the content that the club's putting out now in terms of the Instagrams and Facebook is like an insight into the club. You can actually see what's happening. You can see the training. You can see what he's doing with the team. You can see that there are positive steps being made instead of this closed book where we had no idea what was going on with anything. And it was just like fans were second guessing themselves. We're like, oh, what do we actually do now? Whereas he's literally steering the ship. He is the captain of the ship, and he's pointing us in a direction where we're either with him or we're not on the ship. And I think that speaks like through the whole way through the club, that Kane's gone, but we're still seeing like a positive future coming, which is really weird. Like, not because Kane's gone, but we can see a positive future anyway, with or without Kane.
I think, just building on what you said, it's very clear that there was a feeling around the club that there had to be some steps taken to plan with and without Kane this season. So in the sense that, like, maybe Daniel Levy hasn't been proactive, but certainly Postecoglou and his staff have been proactive in planning for a situation where maybe we don't have Kane going forward. Obviously, that outcome has now happened. And I'm just as excited as you, Glenn. I think in a strange way, and I'm sure loads of people have said this now, Ange starting the season from day one without Kane gives it a real sense of, okay, clean slate. even with squad management and match day squads, no Lloris, no Dier, okay, clean slate. You can very much tell that that era of Spurs with Kane is now in the past. We now have a new era with both Son as captain and Ange steering the ship. I think what's really important, and I'm paraphrasing what Ange said here, is that unlike commentators, pundits, podcasters, anyone who makes football content, Spurs fans are going to be the indication of how well Ange and his team are doing. And he said very clearly, it's up to us to make that decision easy for Spurs fans. We're the ones that are going to be dictating that. It's not up to fans to convince themselves that Spurs are heading in the direction. It's the job of Ange and his team to make sure it feels like Spurs are heading in the right direction. So it will be a transitional period. I am nervous because I don't think that currently the team is going to be ready to play without Kane. And we'll definitely touch on that when we discuss the Brentford game. So I'm nervous in that respect. But I do think that it's good for the team to have this kind of situation where they didn't have him for like three games and then have to change their style of play. Like we start as we mean to go on. I think that's a general feeling right from the starting lineup to the way we play, to the way we're going to continue to play, and the way that Andrew's spoken about it as well.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys sharing this, because I do feel a slight sense of relief that it's over. Obviously, you don't want to lose the best player definitely we've ever seen at Spurs, but probably is the best Spurs player of all time. But I found that transfer window very, very stressful because, like, as you guys would know, I'd always be on the WhatsApp chat and I'd be like, oh, we got to get rid of all this deadwood. And then we don't even know what's going on with Harry Kane. And weirdly enough, just having some clarity on the Kane situation, it's kind of made me feel better about, like, this being a new era. Obviously, it weakens us. But on the flip side of that, I think because of Ange, we have something to be excited about. Another thing, and this is almost like unrelated to Spurs on the pitch, but I was getting so sick of people asking me about if Harry Kane's going to leave, to the point where I was just like, I would rather us just sell him so I don't have to answer this question anymore, because people would come up to you and ask it, and you could see like the relish that they were asking it with. Oh, yeah. Like they're almost like turned on. People coming up to you at the office being like, do you think Harry Kane's going to leave? It's just like, I know you want me to say, yeah, he's going to leave and we're going to be shit. I'm not Daniel Levy. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know what finances we needed to secure the deal. But I just got so sick of answering that question. What I would say is, like, if Bayern make an acceptable bid, then he can go. And in the end, I kind of think that has happened. It's a tough one because he's gone for, you guys were saying before we started recording, and he's gone for £100 million plus there's £20 million in add-ons that can be added. And in one sense, that's quite good in the sense that he only has a year remaining on his contract and he is 30, which again, feel like is a little bit overblown when people talk about him. I don't think 30 is ancient in the modern game, but I think where it doesn't seem like such a good deal is when you see people like Caicedo going for £115 million. Lavia's just gone for £50 million. Mason Mount, £65 million. Havertz, £65 million. It's like you're not paying that much more and you're getting the best number nine in the world. Don't want to get lost in that too much, but yeah, I think where the concerns come with that, and Eddie, you alluded to it a bit when you were talking about the squad, is that if it's true, and Ange did heavily hint at this, that we have already kind of spent that money, I don't know how much the team looks like it's been refreshed in the sense that it's been subject to a massive cash injection. Doesn't look like that. It looks like a team with potential, but that's about it. It looks like a team that you could have built without selling your best ever player.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it also sort of really worries me that I do not trust anyone, not one single person in that boardroom or in the higher ups, to use. If this is money that we now have to spend, and it's not already been spent, I don't trust them to spend it. The decisions that we've made before, when we've had a bit of money injected into the club, have been horrendous. Let's be honest, because when we rebuilt with the Bale money, we could have spent it on two or three world-class players to sort of mould into sort of a really good team around the money that we got from Bale. And we didn't. And then when we got the money from Walker, from City, we could have spent it on a very good right-back or a young right-back that sort of brought the team better. We spent it terribly. But we already had Trippier in the team, luckily. So we sort of got away with that. It was just like, I don't understand how badly this club spends money. Like, it doesn't make sense how badly this... Surely, if you have this much money and you make this many transfers, there's got to be one that stands out. And Eriksen kind of does. But then the rest of them that we signed that summer, you signed seven players for the Bale money, and one of them was a success for you. That's... I really worry about the way we spend money now. Like, honestly, it just worries me to no end.
To be fair, though, Glenn, like, I do agree that we don't have the best precedent for that. But I do actually think a lot of our recent transfer activity is starting to look quite good now. Like, Udogi, yeah, like, genuinely looks like one of the best talents in Europe in his position. Bissouma is a great signing. Bentancur looks to be a good signing. Romero as well. Like, I know we spent a lot on him, but he looks to be a leader. Maddison, we'll get onto him, but he looks transformative. He surprised me so much. I didn't know how good he actually was, to be fair. Glenn, you're looking very smug with that. I didn't really think he was like that, you know? Like, he's a different player to what I expected. But, yeah, not to defend the board too much, not to be too, like, Levy in, but I do think a lot of the signings lately have been quite good. But yeah, I think we need a few more with that 100 mil. Starting with, hopefully, I really hope we bring in this Orban kid. Never seen him play, but the stats look really good. And generally how people talk about him, I think he will be a success. Eddie, what are your views on how we should spend it?
I think that we've talked about this before. And we've actually talked, Cosmo, at least me and you, have talked about this very specifically, about how there are two different rebuilds. There is the post-Kane rebuild and there's a squad rebuild, and those two can't be conflated. They both need to happen separately. Just because Kane got sold doesn't mean the money that Kane got sold for needs to be used for the squad rebuild. The squad rebuild needs to happen, and then what we need to do to replace Kane isn't going to be a one in one out. It's going to have to find players that like we're going to have to money ball it, basically, in terms of finding the players and finding the goals within the squad already, and also in different profiles of players. But those are two separate things. And I think the thing that you're talking about, Glenn, is that when we sold Bale, we're like, okay, let's use this money to strengthen the squad. But we spread that money way too thinly, and we didn't get the quality that was required. With Walker, we didn't spend the money required to get an equally exciting wing back or someone that can actually fill in that role, and we suffered immensely as a result. Just situations like that, I think Spurs aren't, like, what we can't do as a club is sell Kane and get someone like Kolo Muani. That's not something that Spurs are going to be able to do. We're not going to be able to attract that type of player or spend that fee, even though we've just got that fee. Do you know what I mean? Because that's not the type of club we are, as much as a lot of fans want that to be the case. In the same sense, we can't sell Kane and then get like Schurz and get Taremi and get another player and then say that's good enough with the money that we've got from Kane. That's also not correct. So it's a difficult situation that we find ourselves in, because, and we'll go into it, I haven't seen enough from Richarlison in a Spurs shirt to suggest that he's going to be able to carry that berth this season. Not that he won't get goals. I think he'll get goals this season. Just because the way we play, there is going to be way more chance creation than in like the previous three or four seasons at least. But I just think that the type of striker that he is, and also like the also partly the way we play, he has to really step up his game, like at, on a personal level. And I think that bringing in, yeah, like you said, Cosmo, someone like Orban, obviously Vélez, time will tell, with that transfer. Like we're going to have to like create that competition for that spot. I don't think that signing utility players, or players that can play in various positions is useful for competition, because it just means that they fill in a spot whenever someone falls out. You need to create actual competition within spots. I know a lot has been said about Arsenal signing Raya whilst having a first-team goalkeeper in Ramsdale, and potentially a goalkeeper not being the right position for like creating that kind of competition. But being able to do that in other positions is gonna be positive for Tottenham. For instance, yeah, I'll use Arsenal again as a comparison. Signing Jurrien Timber for that left-sided position is only going to improve Zinchenko, and is only going to and getting rid of Tierney, who's clearly not the quality that Arsenal need him to be, is like that's what you need to do in order to refresh a squad, in order to keep it hungry, in order to keep it at the right level. And what we've not done is we've allowed positions to get crazily stale. Like, for instance, having a situation where we have Davies, Dyer, Sanchez, Tanganga, Rodon, as of last week, all still at the club, whilst needing to sign two centre-backs. So, that, do you know what I mean? It was no longer a case of needing to breed like competition. You need to get those players completely out of the squad. So Spurs are in a transitional period without Kane, with Ange, and having to refresh the squad, definitely.
I do think on Richarlison, though, I think he does deserve a bit of a crack of the whip. Like, I think he hasn't played in the striker position for us at all, and I think it is going to be a bit of an awkward sort of adjustment period for him. The signs against Brentford were not good, but it's only one game, and that's why I favour bringing in someone like Orban, because then you got a kind of like young player with a lot of potential who's going to put pressure on Richarlison, but he's not going to be expected to come in straight away. We do always have the option, which has been reported in The Athletic, I think, of Tony potentially in January. That could be interesting. Like, if we're just not scoring goals, then I think that transfer makes a lot of sense in January, even though he's getting on a bit. He's quite old, but striker options are a bit limited. And I think, yeah, we are going to need to, I think either Richarlison or maybe put Son up there. I'd like to see that money kind of like put onto the wing a bit. I think I've seen a lot of talk about like Eze coming in. I think he'd be amazing on either of the flanks, and then he can also play centre mid as well. So those kind of versatile players are like very, very valuable at the moment. And he's a fun player, and Spurs have become a really fun team to watch. So I'd just take that. Like, we've been locked into Haram Ball for so long now. I just enjoy the fact that we can watch Spurs, and it's actually quite enjoyable to watch. That brings us on to Brentford, I think. Who stood out for you guys, would you say?
Madison.
Yeah.
Madison.
He looks the real deal, man.
Madison, or did you say Madison?
I said both. I don't care. That guy is a Madison. He is the one. Yeah. Honestly, I was really, really happy when we got Madison, and at the price we got him at as well. Bargain. When you see that Manchester City are looking at getting, who is it? Paqueta from West Ham for 110 million. Like that. And we got Maddison for like 40. He's homegrown. He's in the England team. Paqueta doesn't even play for Brazil. And he literally lit up our team on the first day that he's there. He made his debut and he was captain in the second half. That says so much. Like he is now my new favorite player. Transferred from Kane. He's gone. Long live Maddison. That's
maybe
what that's
just about the number 10, bro.
Yeah, exactly. And also Adogie as well.
Adogie was great.
I love a left back as well. So
I don't think you have to go as far as comparing Maddison with Paqueta, because I feel like, just look at Mount. I'm sorry, I've never really rated Mount, and he went for 65 million compared to Maddison 40. I think Madison's a better player. And yeah, I kind of alluded to it earlier. I think the thing that surprised me about Maddison, and obviously I didn't watch Leicester that much, kind of as a football fan, my fandom does kind of like gravitate towards just watching Spurs or watching our rivals, hoping for them to lose. I'm not going to stick on Leicester for a laugh. Like, it's no point. But he's, I guess, filtering through what I've seen and what I expect from a number 10, I thought he was going to be a kind of like Ericsson type figure where he gets the ball and he looks to pass the ball into space, pick a lock kind of thing. Where I've been really surprised with him is he's so good at using his quick feet. Like, he can get the ball under pressure and he just shifts the ball past players by like kind of like sucking them in and then flicking the ball past them. And he's just really, really dynamic, a lot more dynamic than I expected him to be. Very, very agile. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Odegaard, actually, to be fair. So maybe it's like a kind of, this is the new way for like a number 10 to play. They're not that traditional kind of like Riquelme sort of number 10 anymore. They are quite dynamic, but he was brilliant. And that free kick, like, it was absolutely perfect. Yeah, like for a kind of like crossed free kick goal, they're not normally that exciting, but that was like, yeah, that was really like something.
I think what's really, really interesting about Maddison, and hopefully won't be a problem going forward, because I don't want it to be a situation where he has to be 100% fit all the time or play every game. What I do like about Maddison is like his desire to be on the ball. We've had four seasons of players hiding, hiding, but not wanting to receive the ball. A big, like, players like Winks, even Son, like, hiding behind players because they don't want to receive the ball under pressure. They don't want to receive the ball to make something. And Maddison is always providing angles to receive the ball. Maybe not necessarily even in always the final third, but like just the desire to be on the ball is the difference that we've seen with Andrew style of football. Bissouma wants to be on the ball. Maddison wants to be on the ball. Players are asking for the ball to feet. They're not hiding. They are asking for it under pressure. And I guarantee you it will not work over the season. We will see mistakes. But what I am enjoying is that with that desire, Maddison also has the quality, because it's not a situation where like, okay, you applaud the desire, but maybe the result is not there, but the quality is also there. And he's just trying something. He's getting the ball in the box or finding our more dangerous players. And he's going to be invaluable. I know you were talking about the amount that City are trying to spend for Paqueta, the amount that United have signed Mount for. You don't even have to look that far. Chelsea are going to sign a championship midfielder in Lavia. I know he's not championship quality, but he is in the championship. And I don't even know if he made 30 appearances in the Premier League last season, and they're going to spend 60 million, including add-ons. That's the difference in terms of value for money that we're getting for Maddison, a proven creator in the Premier League with some absolutely serious numbers for a team that got relegated. So I know that even in the past and on the podcast and in the chat, I've said Maddison isn't a player that people seem to think that he is. And a lot of people would have seen him as an Eriksen type, but that isn't the type of player that he is. And I think that, yeah, I want to see if this is something that continues over the season. Just having someone who's, we now have a few people who are now good at set pieces. You don't have to see, well, part of the reason, part of the positive of Harry Kane even is that you never have to see him stand over a free kick. And then hopefully with Eric Dier out of the team, we never have to see that either. So that's two evils gone out of the world. But yeah, I thought Maddison was incredibly, incredibly impressive. And I'm with you, Cosmo. It definitely surprised me because he brought elements that I hadn't seen because I rarely watched Leicester. But he always seemed to perform against us. So
he did, yeah.
We haven't seen it come in.
But even then, it was like him scoring bangers and stuff, I thought. Whereas like he just looks so sort of like... His dribbling is what's really surprised me. I didn't know he had that in this game. I wasn't familiar with that side of his game.
He played out wide for Leicester, to be fair, at points last season. I think that's a good indication that he can handle himself in those tight spots. Very surprising. Did you want to say anything on Maddison?
I think what you said quickly about... like him staying fit, that is a little bit of a concern because he did get injured a lot at Leicester. And I kind of, now we've found what looks to be like a talismanic number 10. I do worry that there would be a huge gaping hole if he was to get injured. I know we do have Lo Celso to back him up, but it's not quite the same. He's definitely not that kind of player. He's a lot more of like a functional sort of eight, I suppose, that I still don't really know what Lo Celso is meant to be. But I guess there is some depth there, but just the fact that we haven't had a number 10 for like 4 years and now we've signed one and he's brilliant, it does make me worry slightly if he was to get injured. But hopefully we've got a plan for that. Glenn, you mentioned Adogi quickly. He was brilliant. I think we've got to take our hats off to Paratici a little bit on that one.
Yeah, and it's actually... weird that we're sort of going back to the model that we had before where we're spotting these young talents earlier than the big teams. We're taking a bit of a risk on him because he wasn't completely proven. He hadn't really played for Italy before we signed him. And then when we did sign him and loaned him back, he started getting appearances for Italy and getting a bit of a bigger name. But that's the Tottenham that I love. That's the Tottenham that I grew up with. We sign these players that we might not have the financial backing of a state or a multi-trillionaire.
Whatever Bowley's got going on.
Yeah, whatever he's doing, whatever finance shit he's doing. But we have a recruitment team and a sort of a backing of a person, a managing director, whatever you want to call them, who are going to take risks. They're going to go early on talents. And they're gonna sort of like see the rewards of that when these talents come through. And we are going to have players that fail, like that come in young and just aren't at the level. But Adogi is a perfect showing of sign them early, loan them back out, see how they do. The worst comes to worst, get rid of them as dead wood. But really, like he's every single part of the player that Conte thought Sessegnon was. He's every single part of it. He can go forwards. He's strong defensively. He makes challenges. He's not afraid to put a foot in.
Great engine on him as well.
He's unbelievably fit. He was the quickest runner back when they were breaking at the end of the game. He's just absolutely brilliant. And his left foot, so composed. Just honestly, I'm going to rave about him all season. And when we play Davies, I'm going to miss him.
And I also think that with Adogi, like we're gonna forgive those moments where he might be defensively lax or he might not make the perfect decision. And even in the game against Bournemouth, when he was making safer passes than I wanted him to. That's absolutely fine. This you're making your debut in the Premier League. It's going to be difficult, but we're going to forgive that because he clearly is just such a great talent. And I think that he deserves the patience that I think he's going to get from, definitely from Ange at least, but certainly from us as fans. Because, yeah, like Glenn said, he's incredibly exciting to me. And then, like, he provides a counterbalance to someone like Bissouma, who we actually know is quality. And we just needed to see it in a Spurs team. And that's, for me, equally exciting.
I think one of the exciting things about watching that game as well was that we've become so used to watching the same team. Like, the squad has barely changed since basically like 2016. And there were times when I was watching that and I'd look up at the screen and I'd be like, who the fuck is that? Like multiple times. Like, you know, you've got a doggy in there, Vicario, Van der Ven, Madison, even Bissouma, to be fair, because we didn't see him much. So like, there was multiple times where I was like, this doesn't really look like Spurs anymore, but that's really exciting. By the way, Van der Ven, part of his jib, Klaxon. I really like it. He looks really, really good. Really good. And he's kind of what you were saying, Glenn, but in a different way. He's a more high-profile risk, but still a risk. Because I don't really think a top team would have dropped that on him. I'm not sure. I guess Liverpool Chelsea bought De Zassi, so yeah. maybe. But
Liverpool looked at him in the summer, and then they sort of saw the price tag, and they thought, if we're taking a risk on someone this young and so raw, this is not the fee that we'll be looking at spending on them. But this is the sort of person you have, especially with centre-backs, it's so difficult to sort of spot them as a young player and get them before everyone else does. Like, centre-backs is very, very obvious physically if you're going to be a good centre-back. You have to be 6'4" and, like, built.
Fast.
Like, yeah, quick and built like a brick shit house, like early on in your career, to be like, okay, he's going to be a centre back. Like, you know, when you like, if I saw a team of like under 21s walk out, you'd be able to spot the centre back straight away. Like, Ashley Phillips is another one who I'm really happy that we signed. It's another one where we've taken a risk on a centre back, sign him early, and just see what he does. The worst comes to worst, we'll sell him to a Championship team or a low Premier League team. For 10 million for a profit.
And also the wages on all of these guys is
really low because they're young and they're looking to develop. Bissouma, honestly, I want to talk about him as a new signer as well, because Conte had Mad-Eye Moody Bissouma in the prison, like, for the whole time. He had him in that trunk in the corner of Mad-Eye Moody Harry Potter.
It's been a while since I watched Harry Potter, so that took me a second to clock that. But
he had Bissouma in the trunk in his house. That was Bissouma. But another one that we need to talk about, because Caicedo's going for 115 million. Rice has gone for 110. Lavia, who was relegated, has gone for 60 million. And we signed Bissouma for 30. Like, that is... I said at the time how good the signing was, and then Conte decided to do whatever.
He's not at the level.
He's not at the level, and then he wants Højbjerg to pass to play his shins. He's not going to hoof the ball away when he's under the slightest bit of pressure. So Conte didn't love him. But I want to talk about him as a new signing, because honestly, this guy is unbelievable. Like, probably the second most talented player in our team, besides Madison. That's how good he is.
Yeah, and I think, like,
just so happy that he's got this chance.
You're always across what Ali Gold is saying, Glenn, and like, I've watched some of his videos lately, and he was saying that he's become a real leader in the dressing room, and I think you can see that. And yeah, he was excellent. I think he's just so press resistant. He's so good at like getting the ball and kind of recycling it. I'd like, a couple of times I've been like speaking with neutral fans and stuff, and if something about like Caicedo's come up, it's kind of, I have thought, and it's almost been like a whisper it quietly sort of thing, but like, honestly think Bissouma at his peak at Brighton was better than Caicedo. So in that sense, we've got a £120 million player that's just come into the team.
It's hard to disagree. Yeah. And also, again, Caicedo, did he play 30 games last season?
I had to look it up the other day. Played 37, to be fair.
Yeah, but that's his first season.
That's his first season, yeah. Yeah, he played a little bit the season before that, but not much.
Yeah, that's his first season. And if that's the market right now, if one season at that level, and don't get me wrong, Caicedo was fantastic last season, like genuinely fantastic. But if one season at that level is enough to demand 115 million as an acceptable fee, then yeah, what a signing. Again, something that you can say, you know, fair enough, Perez, you went and got that player for that fee. And I think that, again, that's a kind of talent ID that you want. Like, other teams wanted him, clearly. Arsenal, Liverpool. Teams did want Bissouma, but we went and done it, and that's positive for us. And I know time's about to run out, so we'll definitely move this into the next half. But yeah, I think the qualities that he brings is such an elevation and such an improvement on what Højbjerg can do in the same position. And so
night and day.
Another player that needs to stay fit.
True.
For the season.
Yeah, he needs a backup. But yeah, let's go to part two real quick. Hello, welcome back to part two. We got kicked off by the Zoom, as usual, but we're back, we're refreshed already. Yeah, Eddie, you were kind of waxing lyrical about Bissouma. I think, yeah, it's quality. And yeah, it's another one where you're saying about depth. I think it's not even a case for me if Højbjerg goes. I think Højbjerg needs to go and he needs to be replaced. But I'm not sure who to bring in because this is a tricky one. Like, obviously you want competition, but you don't want to bring someone in who's definitely going to start ahead of Bissouma. I've liked the look of Amrabat for a while, but it looks like he's off to United, and I don't think he'd want to come and be a backup to Bissouma. But yeah, Glenn, what was your view on the game as a whole, really?
Yeah, I just think the context of the game is really important here. I think, like, we've come into a game where we have four players who are making their debuts. We've got a manager who's only been in for 8 weeks. This is against a team who are pretty much the tactical kryptonite of the way that Postecoglou's teams like to play.
We were all worried about this.
Yeah, so they like to transition very quickly, very wide, and sit back and basically nullify teams that like to have a lot of possession and play in and around the box. But they're very good at blocking shots and they're very good at heading away crosses. So the fact that we were able to get a draw against a team that only lost twice in the league at home last year against Arsenal and Newcastle, who were both unbelievable, and that they beat a very, very similar, well, a United team who were in a very similar position to us last year, and they beat them 4-0, I think speaks a lot towards the fact that Postecoglou has done an absolutely unbelievable job of preparing the team for this season in spite of having a terrible preseason. And I just think we look like in preseason that we were going to be really weak from set pieces. We've obviously worked on that because we were really solid from set pieces, and they didn't even really look like scoring. Whereas last year when we went away there, you remember when we went away there and they took them corners and Tony was free about four times from corners. It was like a night and day performance to the way we were playing last year. And this Brentford team, and we'll probably come onto this, but the United team that we're about to face, in my opinion, probably the two worst tactical matchups that we could have had in the first two games of the season with Postecoglou, just because of the way they transition so quickly with wide players that are so technically able and like physically gifted with their pace. it was just really fun to watch as well. That's another thing. It's something that we haven't had. We dominated the ball. We non-penalty expected goals. I know people hate stats like that, but we dominated this Brentford team and we came away with a draw, a 2-2 draw, where Man United, with how much money they spent last summer, went away there in their second game and lost 4-0. And I just think it's like, it just sort of lends itself to looking a bit positive. And I don't want to be negative about the way that Postecoglou is sort of forming his team in the first 5 games of the season. I kind of don't really care about the results. It sounds terrible, but as long as the performances and the way that we're playing and you can see the direction, I actually don't care if we lose the first 5, because I just think that this is going to take time and the players will learn, and the players that aren't on board, they'll be found out very quickly.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, were you guys disappointed in the draw at all? Glenn, obviously you weren't, but...
I was kind of in the context that we dominated them through large like points of the game. We had so much possession. But I think Eddie has a point on that as well.
Well, I think the result... The context that Glenn has just spoken about is so crucial to understanding the result and our feelings about the result, because a 2-2 against Brentford under a Conte side would be a completely different feeling. I think in the same game, if the result was 2-2, we would have been chasing that game. We would have been throwing the ball into the box. We would have been relying a lot on Kane, and we wouldn't have had control of the game. And I think in the second half of the game, at least, we were in such complete control of that game that I think 2-2 as a result is not bad at all. Again, we're talking about a team that lost twice at home last season, one of which was against Arsenal, who up until the last five, six games were comfortably heading for a title. And I think that it's a team that is so tactically secure under Thomas Frank. They know their roles. They know when to press, when to go long, when to keep it tight, when to be behind the ball. And something that you noticed instantly in that game is they are insanely good at getting back into position, especially when Tottenham or any team really are on the break. And that is just something that is so underrated, because it means that you have to be pinpoint in your breaks. And I think that we haven't been as good at breaking since really when Kulusevski first came into that team, and we were absolutely sensational on the transition with Kane, Son and Kulusevski. I don't think we've been as good at in the transition, because it's not been as instinctual and instinctive. But what I would say is that whilst, you know, if you want to look at the bare bone facts, we conceded a penalty, a really soft penalty, and we conceded a really poor goal. And if you were to look at it in that aspect, you'd say maybe, that is disappointing. But where you see where we got our goals, set pieces, which shows that we haven't gone backwards. We're still really good at scoring from set pieces, as we have been since Conte's come in, but not usually from free kicks, which is another element that we, you know, James Maddison's delivery is going to be very, very important over the season. And the other goal coming from Emerson being in a midfield position. So again, we're talking about a tactical change that's come and bared fruit in the opening game, where our inverted fullback has scored from a midfield position on the edge of the box. With that kind of context, you can forgive, like, maybe not getting all 3 points, because I think that at this point, even if we potentially lost a game, which, you know, would have been a bad start to the season, if we had played the way that we played yesterday, you're you're more inclined to take the positives from the game rather than just look at the result as what it is. We did get a point, and that might prove to be an invaluable point later on in the season, because by the way that Brentford looked, again, they're going to be a difficult team to break down at home again. And I do foresee them getting a lot of points at home. And again, that is without Ivan Toney. But I do just like, yeah, quite, I mean, like, honestly, if we didn't have Udogie, I would happily take someone like Rico Henry at Spurs. I just think he's so quality at the timing of his runs. He's got incredible pace and he's got good quality. And Burma, again, so dangerous. Brentford are a good team. So with the context of last season and how good they were last season, and the fact that we only finished a point ahead of them last season as well, I think that isn't necessarily a bad result.
Yeah. Can I also say about their goals? They got a penalty that, look, it's a soft, very, very soft penalty. I'm not going to come on here and start like whiling out and say, oh, this is a terrible decision. I don't think it was a great decision, to be honest with you. But if I'm getting those as a Spurs supporter as well, I kind of don't mind it. It's like he's made contact with him, but he's made the most of it. It's a penalty. They scored a penalty, whatever. They also score a goal on a counter-attack, like we said earlier, which is something that they are like literally renowned for. That is their tactic. They're very good at countering quickly down the wings and getting the ball into the box with oncoming runners. And we didn't have our most influential defender on the pitch at that point. We had Sanchez who, look, whatever Spurs fans want to say about him, he had quite a good game. But he did make a mistake for that goal by dropping off and allowing that Avisa to have the space that he did for the second goal. If we're honest, we lost our most influential defender, and we still got a draw in a back five, including the keeper, that had three debutants and a player who's been seen as dead wood for our team. So, to be honest with you, I'm really, really happy about the way we defended, especially in the second half, without Romero having lost him so early on in the game and losing a sub through that, which, don't get me started on that, but just speaks to Spurs as an organisation and the medical team as a whole. But, yeah.
You've got to say, though, like, I understand that that's a bit of a... that is a fuck-up on our part, but, like, if the Premier League want to encourage concussion substitutions, don't make someone fill out a form. Surely, yeah, all you need to do is say to the fourth official, this is a concussion sub, and then that's it. Why the hell does that fill out a form? I don't understand that at all.
I completely agree. But playing devil's advocate, and I'm not the sort of person to say this off my own back, but it does mean that he can play against Manchester United next week if we want him to, because if he had have come off as a concussion
minimum
sub,
6 days.
I think it's a week. So he wouldn't have actually been able to play the Man United game because we played on the Sunday.
To be fair though, if he is concussed, then he shouldn't play.
Don't play him. Don't play him.
We should talk as well, like the long term results or something like that.
Yeah, but I will say that if he has recovered from a minor concussion, let's say, by the time it comes to the game or preparing for the game, I think it's a good thing that we'll be able to play our most influential defender and someone who is now a leader and a vice captain in our team.
Yeah, and we saw the vice captains step up when Son went off, Madison taking the armband. It sounds like he's really involved already. Like, with Son making the players go over to like near the away fans to do the huddle, like Madison came out and said that Sonny texted him before to like talk to him about that. So that's another thing I'm really pleased about, because I think it's only going to make Madison a better player, giving him this responsibility. Remains to be seen whether it will with Sonny. I think it will. Captain's his country. I'm excited to have him as captain. I think he deserves it. But I don't think the role he's playing under Ange suits him at all. And me and Jed have said this basically from day one of getting Ange, even though like we love his style of play, and I feel like we were kind of early ones onto the train of like wanting him purely because he played like such good football. I was in for a bit of a nasty surprise when I started watching like the tactics videos, and they were like, oh, the wingers like to stay really, really wide, and then the striker likes to press. Obviously, we don't have that problem anymore because Kane's gone, so we do have a striker that can press. But I think what kept people positive about Spurs over the last couple of years was the fact that we had this really talented front three. And I do kind of feel like, well, obviously we've lost Kane, and Kulusevski and Son, I don't think really suit these roles at all, especially Son. Because don't get me wrong, like Son's one of my favourite players to ever play for Tottenham, and I still think he's great, but he hasn't been a winger for about 4 or 5 years. He's a striker, really. I think his best position is basically in a two, like playing off someone like Kane. And he just looks really awkward. He looks really awkward out there on the wing. And I don't really know how we're going to solve it. I think he is a good enough player where he could kind of run it back, or Ange could tweak the system to kind of find a way to make it more efficient. But it doesn't look comfortable for him. And Kulusevski, that's a whole other conversation because he hasn't been good for a long time.
I do want to say on Son, sorry, Eddie. It's going to be a quick one. I do want to say on Son, he has had the shortest preseason of any player other than Oliver Skipp, who also didn't really impress me on the weekend, but did a job-ish. Like, Son has had the shortest preseason. He's had the shortest time with Ange. Also still recovering from an injury. So I listened to a lot of Spurs journalists and podcasts and in the know people, and we know that Spurs weren't training Son in full contact training sessions for a lot of the time that we were on tour. So it's kind of, I want to give Son his time in that position. I don't want to write him off, because I think that especially against a team like Brentford and Manchester United, who are a team that are going to sit back very organised, not allow for many transitions in behind, which is Son's bread and butter. I want to give him time on those. But against the teams that do play a high line, for example, Aston Villa, Bournemouth look to be doing that a lot more now. I think he's going to thrive in this position because he'll be able to make the out-to-in runs that Rashford, for example, was making last season. And I think that's where he's most comfortable. But I do agree with you, Cosmo, that he does look awkward when teams sit back and he has to try and take on a man, or he's not very good at 1-2s either. It's just a bit like really forced in that position. But yeah, Eddie, what were you going to say?
Just that it felt like a square peg in a round hole, where like a lot of people who've gone into the tactics of Ange have been excited about Ange's football, but haven't been excited about the profiles of players that we have. And I think that's very fair. Like, I think you can't change a whole team unless you're Chelsea in one transfer window. You can't, do you know what I mean? Like, you can't replace every single player in the starting lineup for the profiles that you want. And so you are going to have awkward situations where you're putting a bit of a square peg in a round hole. And Son definitely fits that because he's not a winger. He hasn't been a winger. He's at the very most been an inside forward for the last three or four years. And at times been a centre forward in that period as well. So I think that there are solutions. We do have wingers in the team. Solomon, Perisic, although Hill's injured, he is a conventional out-and-out winger. We could see someone like Solomon or Perisic on the wing and move Son into centre-forward if it is something that we're looking to do. I think that it's difficult because by doing that, you're then basically adding another striker into that position. and again, Richarlison's going to be the one that suffers as a result. Also, it means that if we do sign someone like Orban, Son then just goes back out on the wing again. So it's not really a solution. So we do kind of have to, I think Son has to work on it, basically. Train on getting better at those one-on-ones, getting better if we are able to play, when teams play a bit of a higher line, from those out to in runs that he's already so good at. I think that the combination of that left side can bear so much fruit for Tottenham, with Udogie, Madison, Son, excellent players on that side. So I'm not worried that when it's like Son's going to be ineffective for the whole season, but he might need some time just like getting used to the role. On the other hand, with Kulusevski, there may be a time in the season where we see him as an eight, inside that where Skip is against, obviously, probably like not the top opposition, because I think we would need someone like Saar, Bentancourt or Skip just for that security, especially if you've got Emerson and Vertonghen on that side as well. So we wouldn't necessarily probably see this against top opposition, but I would be interested to see like what Kulusevski can do in that eight role, because he is, for like all his faults that he's shown over the last like 6 months, he's an excellent ball carrier, especially in the transition. He's strong on and clever. I think where he struggled is that when he's really far out wide, if defenders are showing him on his right foot, he isn't that good. Sometimes he can get round, but that's him using his brain rather than any of his other attributes, because he's not the quickest. But if his starting position is a bit more central, then he's able to use that left foot way more effectively, because he isn't working so hard to find a decent position just to whip a ball in or to take a shot. So we may see him in there. That's just me speculating, though, because I think with Ange, that midfield box that you create with the eights and the inverted fullbacks, like, there's a very specific role that you have to play. I'm not sure Kulusevski has those qualities that a Bentancur or a Madison has, or even a Saar has, when it comes to those positions. Like Glenn said, I didn't really see anything like to write home about Skip's performance. But that's mainly because we know Skip's limitations as a footballer, and like we see that a bit in that position that he was playing. But what he does do is he is robust, and he will provide cover. And I think that's going to be the difference this season, is that when you have Emerson inverting, you do kind of need the security of someone who's a bit more defensively minded, just simply because like Emerson will lose the ball. I don't want to be down on him, but he will lose the ball just because his passing isn't as crisp as some of the other players in our teams. And so if you look at the passing maps and like the general positions of the players in that formation, Skip was slightly behind Emerson a lot of the time, and that's just because Skip provides that security, because you're very unlikely to find Skip in Emerson's position where Emerson scores that goal. So yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think all of those players are in for like a massive season, because they need to make those positions their own. And like we will see, like you've still got players that I hope find a pathway to the first team, like Alfie Devine, who can easily be another player that can play in that eight position, hopefully, depending on the way he fills out as he gets older. You've got even players like Velid, and even players like Scarlett. Like these are positions where we are talking about now as, what do we do about these positions? But we do have young players coming through But and we've seen that with Celtic, the youth team were playing in the same way that the senior team were playing. So hopefully there is a pathway for all those young players to go into those positions. But yeah, I agree. I don't think Son was fantastic. But I don't know if it's as much a structural or a personal issue as it is just like growing pains.
Yeah.
Because it means so much as a team tactically.
Yeah. Everything you were saying there about like the number eight though, and like the player is going to need to be like a little bit defensively minded with Emerson Royale in mind. I think I'm just so excited for Bentancur to come back, because I feel like he is a bit of a mix of an eight and a six, but he can also, he was really adding goals to his game under Conte before he got injured. So that just feels like a perfect mix of someone who's reasonably solid defensively and can also score, who's good at getting into the box and getting in on the end of stuff. I feel like he could be so good. Obviously, we have to temper expectations a little bit because he's coming off the back of a massive injury. But yeah, I think he could be a real star for us, to be fair.
Yeah, I do want to add with Bentancur, I think we have to be very careful getting this idea of him being an eight, like fully, like in our minds, because he could well be the six, that sort of like can play in both of those positions when we don't have Bissouma, because we know AFCON's happening this year. We're going to need another six, and I think Bentancur has all the press proof sort of abilities of Bissouma, if not a bit more secure and just as good at ball carrying when he was playing as a six towards the end under Conte. I do think that these sorts of competitions are things that we need to hold in the back of our head, because obviously Son will be going away for the Asian Cup as well. The Asia Cup. We just need to sort of have
Are they happening at the same time, Asia Cup?
Yeah, they're around the same time.
But we're going to get decimated. February.
I don't know as such, because we do have so many players. This is where it kind of is like a good thing. We can kind of mould the team how we want them to be for that period, because we do have a lot of players that can play in these positions. For example, Solomon in pre-season looked unbelievable. And
I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, I'd be more than happy for him to take Son's place while he's at the Asia Cup.
Or Perisic,
again, another player who looks like he's actually like really sort of impressed Ange, because we had written him off. We'd said, look, doesn't play wing-backs. He's a specialist wing-back. He's gone. But really, when he came on, he wasn't that impressive. He made a few take-ons, but there are some things that he needs to do that just differently because of his age and because he's not as quick as he once was. But that's two players who play in Son's position already. And then we have Saar and Bissouma who'll be gone. But we also have Bentancur coming back and Skip. And I'm hoping that we spend some money on a box-to-box eight, or a player who can play as an eight, as a more attacking eight if we have to. Eze would be my number one choice in that regard, for sure, like without a doubt, because he can play on the wing as well. But I've always been quite hot on Gallagher, especially if Madison's going to be playing so high up in the pitch, almost playing as a striker when we press. Basically, we play a 4-4-2 when we press, and that second eight is going to have to do a bit more of the defensive work. And Gallagher's numbers in terms of pressing and off the ball work are, I don't want to say it, but like they are some of the best in the league. Like I don't want to hype him up as one of the best midfielders in the league, but in terms of,
he was good on the weekend as well.
Yeah, but in terms of his,
that's the thing. Are Chelsea going to sell him?
Well, they've just signed two centre mids.
They just
spent 165 million.
But will they sell to us though?
I don't see why not. I don't see why not. It's especially with a lot of teams concluding their business before the season. We're still in a transitional moment where we have money, and they could probably demand about the £35 million mark for him that they're going to need.
They want more. I'm sure they rejected £40 million from West Ham earlier.
I think I don't know if that was actually a concrete bid, but again, Yeah, we'll see, because West Ham are spending their Rice money already, so they won't have the money that will sort of tempt Chelsea into selling him. I don't know. And I don't think the player's one to sort of like be happy with that second role, especially with the two midfielders coming in. That's just me. And especially they spent how much on Fernandes as well? Enzo?
Yeah, like 100 million.
Yeah, this is like Gallagher's not a player who's going to be playing first team football for Chelsea at all anymore. That's just it.
I don't hate it. It doesn't really excite me, but I don't hate it.
It's not, not a sexy transfer.
Yeah,
it's
the
not.
Way you've outlined it there as well, like, yeah. And to be fair, we could do with filling out the homegrown quota. Glenn, you've been waiting years to hear me say that.
He's finally admitted it.
Well, I think maybe Madison has kind of like swayed me a little bit, to be fair. Bring in the Brits.
Yeah, and obviously Phillips as well, although we don't need to register him because he's under 21 or under 22, whatever the age is. But yeah, I think what this weekend proved, if we want to move the conversation on, is that we do kind of need to bring in another attacker. If that is in the form of Orban, then I'm all for it. But I want it to, like, it has to be an attacker that's dynamic for me. It has to be someone that, like, can move quick, aggressive presses. Because we have Vélez as different profile.
Yeah.
A bit bigger, a bit more of a someone to find in the box.
So you're not taking Lukaku now?
Do I look like Jed to you? yeah, defo not Lukaku. Don't know how those rumours ever started, because he's the furthest thing away from an Ange striker that you can possibly get. So yeah, I think we do need another attacker, I think. And Orban, from what I understand, is that profile that we'd be interested in. I'm not sure. I do think the Taremi stuff was just like not really true, because again, whilst I think he's actually quality, like he is actually a good striker, just again, not the right profile.
Too old.
And 30 years old, yeah. So, yeah, don't think that he would be the one. And to me, like, I don't know if there's any other attackers or strikers, at least, that fit the profile like Orban does, unless you're spending more money. Because I think what we could essentially seal the deal for just under 30 million euros or around 30 million euros.
Don't know why we haven't done it already. It's nothing.
Yeah, yeah, that is an absolute steal for the quality that you're going to get. And this isn't just like a risk. Like, there is quality. Like he will, if like the attitude is right, and if he gets a platform to do so, he will perform at any level that he plays at. I'm so confident of that.
I wanted to say, sorry, Eddie, I didn't want to cut you off, but
no.
I've been so in on Orban, like, really early on. Like, mm-hmm. there's a football manager YouTuber who I really like, called Zealand, and who made a video about him over a year ago now, when he transferred from Bison FC to a Norwegian team, and then on to Ghent. Said every single person who spoke about him has said how hard he works in training. And how, like, his attitude is second to none. He's like, and the sources that he also spoke to in this video that he made are people who are specialized in sort of like this football that's lesser known, and like Norwegian football, and then sort of Belgian football as well. And they said, this kid's generational. Like, we've produced so many talents in these leagues over the last like 10, 15 years. And they haven't seen a talent like his. Like, he burst onto the scene in Norway, scored like 10 goals in 4 games, and then had, I think at the end of last season, he had like 10 goal involvements in the space of the first like 3 games that he played as well. This guy is next level talent. And whether that materializes initially at Spurs, I don't know, but this is a guy who I've been on like early doors, like probably a year and a half ago. And I just think he'll be incredible for Spurs. Like, yeah. I'd love to see that sort of scouting and talent ID.
It's a combination of like the volume of goals he's got, and then also the way he takes the goals, and also the level that he's got these goals at, because it's not like he's only doing it in a Belgian league. Like, he scored a lot of these goals in the Conference League, so we know he can do it to like a somewhat decent level. So I think it makes sense.
Hat-trick,
I think
in the just Conference do it League as well.
In the Champions League,
in the Conference League.
Oh, Conference League, yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Only a team competition, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's all positive. I think it's like you said earlier, Glenn, like right at the beginning of the pod, these are low risk signings. I don't think 25 mil in this market is really that much. If it doesn't work out, loan him, sell him, whatever. Like, we're a big club, we can afford to take these kind of risks.
It's especially when teams know that we have the Kane money and this is still the price. That's what shocked me so much. Like, the Genk will know how much we have for the Kane like deal, and they'll know that we were able to spend it on a striker and they're still only quoting us 30 million.
Like, yeah,
this is what we need to get done now.
Very quickly, because we're about to run out of time on the Zoom again. We didn't really get a chance to preview United. It's the idea of Rashford behind our defence is making me pretty terrified. Don't really want to do a prediction, but how are you guys feeling about it?
It'll be interesting to see how they play today, and I'll be a bit more confident in how I feel about that game. I think we just need to be careful about the pace that they have, because that is going to be the problem with this team. We're going to be exposed on the wings, and they do have quick players, so we need to be careful of that. But on the flip side, I do think we can cause some problems. So I don't want to put a score. I really don't want to put a score.
No, let's not curse it. Let's not curse it. But we're going to run out. So thanks for listening, guys. Glenn, do you want to don't curse?